broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this here show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. Radio for Patriots by Patriots. Thank you very much, Coach Dozier. Good luck. And, of course, Dr. Ron Turner, our guest earlier. And if you want to follow as to what we do on our show each and every night, we have our show log, which we put on our homepage following the broadcast. Within 30 minutes, the show log is up. And we have a search engine feature on our website as well. As we are loading in our archive material, we the actual log itself will pop up automatically. All those search terms that you might use in looking for a piece of audio. So check out our search engine as well at philhendryshow.com. Now, yesterday we were discussing D.B. Cooper. And by the way, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard are here. You guys still into the story?
I'm still into the story. But you explained it yesterday. You said it's pretty much, you know, it's done.
Yeah, you said it. The guy's not alive.
The guy, I don't think the guy's alive. But the FBI still would like to identify who he is.
It's D.B. Cooper.
That ain't his real name. That's a fake name he gave.
Yeah, well, you don't know, though. I mean, he might have given the real name.
No, he didn't give the real name. How do you know he gave the real name? The cops, even if he did give the real name, obviously that name didn't come up with anything because it's been 40 years and they still don't know a thing about this guy.
Well, they know the guy comes from Seattle.
How do you know he comes from Seattle?
That's where the plane took off from.
That doesn't mean he comes from there. Maybe he flew in there from somewhere else. He comes from Seattle.
Well, I mean, what more do they need to know about the guy? If he ain't alive, it doesn't make any difference. They can't put him on trial.
I know they can't put him on trial, but what they would like to do is identify who he is. As I said to you guys last night, if you can identify who the guy is, it gives you some idea, perhaps, it gives you some idea as to his motivation. Why did he do what he did? Why did he do what he did? Why did he did what he did? You know.
Yeah, and then why didn't he do what he didn't do?
Exactly. So here we have the FBI's promising lead in the D.B. Cooper skyjacking case has led to a man who died, dun, 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 10 years ago, according to an FBI spokesman.
What?
Hold on. Special Agent Fred Gutt said I guess if they go to Fred Gutt for something, they call it a gut check, huh?
Yeah, probably go do a gut check.
Yeah.
Anyway, Special Agent Fred Gutt said the Bureau's Seattle office has been investigating for more than a year a lead that has more credibility and detail than any other tips regarding the unsolved skyjacking of a Seattle-bound flight on Thanksgiving Eve of 1971. So, this is the FBI investigating a lead that is a year old now. So we're just now hearing about this, that they said had more credibility and detail than any other tip regarding this skyjacking. Now, Special Agent Gutt declined to identify the man who died of natural causes. There is a basic story, he says, that seems logical. If the man is identified as the legendary hijacker in America's only unsolved skyjacking, it would mean he lived some 30 years after parachuting from the plane with $200,000 in cash, defying those who concluded he couldn't have survived the leap. That would make me wrong from what I said last night. You know.
Yeah, but you said that. Oh, yeah, you did say he died.
Yes, so I...
Yeah, you're wrong, man.
Ha, 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 ha.
So what? I didn't bet any money on it. I hope I didn't. Anyway, if this guy is identified, this man who died 10 years ago, as the legendary hijacker in America's only unsolved skyjacking, would mean he lived some 30 years after parachuting from the plane with $200,000 in cash. Well, one thing we do know that he did not land with all of that money. At least some of it was lost. Gutt said the FBI's vetting of the case warrants further investigation, noting little contradictory information has emerged that would rule out the possible suspect. But he said that doesn't mean the case is about to be solved. The FBI laboratory has determined that a guitar strap that belonged to the man is not conducive to lifting fingerprints to compare to partial prints found in the plane. A guitar strap that belonged to this man is not conducive. So what we have, is this the piece of evidence that they had?
Well, they said they had a piece of evidence. They didn't say what it was.
It might be the guitar strap if the guy played guitar, but if he didn't play guitar, you know, well, it's not Keith Richards, right? I mean,
what do you think, man? Is it Keith Richards?
Man, he ain't the only guy to play guitar.
I know, but he just wrote a book.
Oh, well, that must mean he's D.B. Cooper. He just wrote a book. Do you think it's Keith Richards? You know what? I'll tell you this much, though, bud. That's not a bad idea, because Keith Richards looked like he fell out of an airplane, doesn't he?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I thought that was funny. Anyway, the FBI laboratory has determined that a guitar strap that belonged to the man is not conducive to lifting... All right, so they have a guitar strap that belongs to this guy that they say is very, very intriguing as a suspect. However, they can't lift any prints from it because a guitar strap, a leather strap, is not conducive to lifting a fingerprint. It doesn't mean it's a dead end, Gut said, adding that the case agent is working with the man's family to obtain other items with better surfaces to lift fingerprints. The FBI has learned that the man reported an auto injury in 1971, perhaps to explain injuries suffered in the jump, according to King TV.
So he's like covering up whatever injury he got.
Could be. Could be. He reported an auto injury in 1971, perhaps to explain injuries suffered in the jump, King TV reported. Gut said the FBI is still actively pursuing a number of different leads in the fabled skyjacking, in which the hijacker jumped from the rear of a Boeing 727. FBI spokeswoman Anne Sandola Dietrich said on Sunday that agents were investigating the promising lead a day after a British newspaper reported the development in a lengthy feature story on the notorious case.
Wait a minute. I want to ask a question.
Go ahead.
If this guy, he could have hijacked the plane that didn't go the way he wanted to, right?
He could have hijacked the plane and didn't go the way he wanted to. Yeah.
All right. And all he has to do is go home, and the wife thinks, oh, what happened to you? He's in the hospital. I got an automobile accident.
Yeah, he could have done it all, like, in just one day.
Well, in other words, what you guys are saying, he could have covered it up. So he was gone.
Yeah.
He was gone as maybe his wife. Who knows if he has a wife? Nobody knows anything. Maybe he didn't. Maybe there wasn't anybody that missed him. But, of course, if he's reporting an automobile injury to cover up an accident skyjacking, there's at least one or two people that he has to cover this up for. It could be an employer. They may be family members. Who knows? But no, if you're saying that it was not an inordinate amount of time, it wasn't. Hey, what happened to you? Oh, I got in an automobile accident. You're not going to believe it. I've been in the hospital. I don't know how that comes down. I mean, what do you do? Just walk into a hospital? Maybe he walked in or something.
Yeah, he could have told him, like, his car went off a cliff and he dove out. And then he just walked into the hospital.
That ain't going to work, man.
They're going to wonder where the car is.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Thank God you guys are here, man. My car went off a cliff. I dove out and I walked here. Where's your car, sir? Oh, you know, it's back there. I think it blew up and disintegrated.
He could say that.
Yeah, sure. He could say that. He could also say, I just flew here.
Where?
Never mind, Robert, okay? Just let me finish the story. FBI spokeswoman Anne Sandola Dietrich said on Sunday that agents were investigating the promising lead. All right. Dietrich said the FBI received a tip from a member of law enforcement about a credible person with information on the case. The passenger who jumped from the Northwest Orient Airlines jet on November the 24th, 1971, identified himself as Dan Cooper. A day after the skyjacking, FBI agents checked out a Portland man with the name D.B. Cooper. Although that man was quickly cleared, the name stuck in news media accounts. The tall, dark-complexioned man paid $20 cash for a one-way flight from Portland to Seattle. The jet was barely in the air before he told a flight attendant he had a bomb and showed her a briefcase holding several red cylinders and a nest of wires. We know all this stuff. When the plane landed in Seattle, the passengers were exchanged for parachutes and ransom money paid by the airline. The plane took off, headed south toward Mexico with the hijackers and the crew, with the hijacker and the flight crew. About 30 minutes later, a cockpit warning light showed the rear stairway was fully extended. The pilot asked over the intercom, is everything okay back there? The hijacker yelled back, no, and bailed out the back from 10,000 feet into freezing darkness. It wasn't until the plane landed for more fuel in Reno, with the rear stairway still down, that the crew and FBI knew he was gone. Authorities estimated he landed near the small community of Ariel, Cowlitz County, east of Woodland, in a rugged, wooded region of, Washington State. The man was never found, and only $5,800 of the ransom money, whose serial numbers the FBI had recorded, turned up when a child digging in a sandbar on the north bank of the Columbia River in 1980 unearthed a bundle of $20 bills. The FBI has partial fingerprints from a magazine left on the plane and parts of the airliner cabin. The other thing that they don't have is any of that money turning up spent. You know?
Yeah, but he could have put it in a laundry.
Yeah. He could have put it in a laundry. You mean he laundered it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe he went to Mexico. You know what I'm saying? Go down to Mexico and stick it in a bank down there. I don't know. I mean, it's probably not the most difficult thing in the world. I'm telling you, though, I find it hard to believe that this guy survived. I find it hard to believe that he was able to spend any money at all. I find it hard to believe that he even existed. I find it hard to believe that I even read that news story to you two idiots, because you are trying to tell me that he's Keith Richards.
Well, I just figured it. The guy fell out of a plane.
Right. All right. Our number, 877-876-PHIL here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Which state leads the nation with parents too stupid to vaccinate their kids? Which one is it, huh? I'll give you a hint. My producer, Jason Rantz, lives there. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio.
Also a Ted Bundy
for
story.
For Patriots, by Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Woo! Radio for Patriots. Hi, Patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Thank you. And good evening. And, of course, philhendryshow.com for Phil TV and HD, which is on right now. And we're very intrigued by the D.B. Cooper story, and we were talking about it during the break, Rance and I and Dan, and we have come to the conclusion that it was Deep Throat who hijacked that plane, played by Hal Holbrook in the movie. No, I'm kidding. I don't know who it is, but obviously the FBI like whoever it is that they like, and they want more stuff from the guy's house. So it seems maybe they've got a search warrant, and they're going to try to turn up other fingerprints. If they find a fingerprint that matches, then we know who this chap was. He did survive, and I'm dead wrong, and that won't be the first time. All right. Washington State is experiencing an epidemic of worry over vaccine safety. The state leads the nation in the percentage of parents opting out of vaccinations for their kindergarten-age children, but a new state law could be poised to change that distinction. Finally! Finally!
What?
What do you mean, what? We got whooping cough is coming back. You don't know what the hell else can come back because some groovy new age mom doesn't want her kids vaccinated because she's afraid the kid's going to get the autism. She doesn't know. She's got a doctor here, Jenny McCarthy there, a book over here, and everybody's an expert. So they don't get their kid vaccinated. The next thing you know, we have an upsurge in diseases that we've been able to keep under the mat for almost 50 years.
Yeah, but they're going to have a law, man, to make them do it.
I hope so. I hope like hell they get a law going. A public health law. You're going to do what? Well, my child is not. Well, isn't that nice? So your child comes to school infected with God knows what. And another kid that didn't get a vaccine, he's infected with God knows what. And the next thing you know, we got ourselves a big-time infection comeback of what? Whooping cough, I know, made a comeback. You want to see mumps? How about measles? How about chicken pox? You know, measles can kill a kid. You know that, don't you? Measles almost killed me when I was a kid. I'll never forget, I was 10 years old, and I was delirious. I had a fever of 104 degrees. I'm not kidding.
What do you mean you were delirious?
I mean, I was delirious. I mean, I got out of the bed. I remember getting out of the bed and walking through the house, and my mother grabbing me and putting me back into the bed. And my sister was worse off than me. She had her fever was worse. It was no fun. No fun. I was a 10-year-old kid, and I got the measles. And I was out of school for 2 weeks, and it sucks. I had chicken pox.
You get the mumps?
I never got the mumps. That's the thing. I never got the mumps.
Wait a minute. You could still get a mump from a kid then.
What do you mean a mump? You mean mumps?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Technically, yeah, I could. I haven't had to worry about that because there have been vaccines. They didn't have mumps vaccine when I was a kid. And then, of course, you know, when I got married and there were four children in that house, and I began thinking, oh, my God.
What?
Well, if I'm sitting there in a house full of kids and I've never had a mumps vaccine and they're going to school, and they're, you know, God knows what they were bringing back into that. I'll tell you, the first year that I was married, I was sick every single solitary day. Every day, I was sick.
Why?
At the thought of being married. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I was sick because...
man, you're going to hear that, man.
I'm kidding. I was sick because of all the diseases that the kids were bringing back from other diseased kids. Kids are great. Kids are marvelous. Kids are our future. There's no question. But they are just a collection of little disease carriers. Kids are nothing more than the walking dead, if you want to get right down to it. Little kids, as cute as they are, they might as well be zombies. Carrying...
Yeah, probably carrying like a rage virus.
Carrying the rage virus, who knows? And they come walking in with their little zombied out, we're kids. And, you know, here comes God, you know, Impetigo and festering, oh, geez. So Washington State leads the nation in parents opting out of vaccines. Well, you know, I don't mean to be a smartass, but what gives you the right to opt out of a vaccine? Who are these people? More than 6% of Washington kindergartners were missing one or more immunizations in the 2009-2010 school year. The most commonly skipped vaccine was the chickenpox vaccine. Since 1997, there's been a steady statewide decline in the number of school children who are fully vaccinated. A new state law that went into effect in July seeks to close a loophole that parents use to avoid providing proof of vaccinations to schools. Now, parents must meet with a medical provider, get a signed letter confirming the consultation took place, and provide the note to child care centers or schools. Dr. Jack Stevens, a pediatrician at the Everett Clinic, said the world has changed. It used to be the unimmunized child was the child of an economically disadvantaged family with poor access to health care. Nowadays, the kid is from a well-educated family, but the parents are still idiots. No, he didn't say that, but they do their own independent research and tell you what they're willing to do. Oh, is that right? Let me explain something, folks. You want to get an epidemic going, that's a great way of doing it. You want to get an epidemic, it's a great way of doing it. You know, they got, they are. I told you about the work that Rotary and Maria was involved in this, getting rid of polio in India. And polio, India is one of the, I think is the last remaining country on the face of the earth where there has been a case of polio. They had a couple of cases, I don't know, 2-3 years ago. Why? Because not all of the people were getting immunized. And the reason for that was that the Muslim clerics, the Muslim leaders, and these were mostly in Muslim areas, said that this polio vaccine wasn't a vaccine at all. It was a way to the infidel used to wipe out Muslims, to kill them. This kind of nonsense. And so these poor Muslim families stayed away from the polio vaccine for a while, but then they finally were able to get the word into these communities. No, that isn't a way. It's not going to kill you. This is to get so you don't wind up. And if you've ever seen some of the people, have you ever seen, do you remember that show, Bud?
Yeah, one guy was like walking on his ankles.
Oh, that's terrible deformity. Horrible deformity as a result of polio in India and Pakistan. So now they finally got rid of all of this jazz and all these jackasses, and they're immunizing the kids again. And they just had a big push on here, I don't know when the hell it was. Was it last winter? They went into India and they immunized I don't know how many millions of kids against polio. This is what you're supposed to do. You don't play it like you're doing your own independent research. These people, you wouldn't know. People, don't do it, because you're going to put not only your own kid at risk, you put God knows how many other kids at risk. And the next thing you know, we got a public health emergency because some brain surgeon in the suburbs decided, oh, well, my child doesn't get the chickenpox vaccine. Don't you know that that causes their heads to swell up to the size of a watermelon and their eyeballs bow? Yeah, you should have seen the Jenny McCarthy book I was reading. I mean, with all due respect to Ms. McCarthy, and I know that she suffered with an autistic child, and we all wish her the best, but be responsible and get your kids immunized. Washington leading. And you know what that says, Washington State, with all due respect? That says basically you lead the nation in dumb parents. So,
Well, that's not what it means.
That's exactly what it means.
Well, that's pretty judgmental.
Oh, is that pretty judgmental?
I think it's pretty judgmental, yeah.
Really? Well, I don't think it's pretty judgmental. Washington leads nation in parents opting out of vaccines. That means to me, Washington leads nation in dumbbell parents.
I think you're being judgmental.
Great, I'm being judgmental. That's my job, man. I'm supposed to be judgmental. You know?
Well, I don't think it's very fair of you.
Well, what are you guys giving? Get out of here giving me your opinion. What I say goes, okay? I say Washington State leads the nation in responsible parents.
Right.
I mean, it leads. All right, coming up, we've got serial killer Ted Bundy. Yes, back from the grave. He'll be sitting in for an interview here. Actually, we are going to have Ted Bundy on one of these nights in one of our As You'd Like to Hear Them interview segments. But for now, this is a story about Ted Bundy's DNA. Where is it going? Well, the National Database. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Speaking of patriots,
what?
That's a Buffalo Bill. Never mind.
Yeah, what's the thing you're looking at, man?
I was just looking at some old football footage, and like right there, that's the scrambling Jackie Kemp, and he's being tackled by a patriot. So, all right.
That's the Boston Patriots. That's not the ones now.
It's the same franchise, man.
What do you mean?
It's the same team. It's not a different team. It's the same franchise.
No, they don't call it that, though.
They don't call it the Boston Patriots anymore. They call them the New England Patriots now. Okay?
Well, okay.
It's the same team. Trust me. Yeah, that's right, bud. They closed down the Boston Patriots and started a whole new team called the New England Patriots. Have nothing whatsoever to do with the other team. I don't think so. Okay. A vial of serial killer Ted Bundy's blood, speaking of football, a vial of serial killer Ted Bundy's blood has been found in Florida, and investigators will use... What do you mean, found? It's been found in Florida, and investigators will use the newly discovered evidence to try to solve cases that went cold decades ago. Before he was executed in 1989, Bundy confessed to more than 30 murders and was suspected of many more. A complete DNA profile couldn't be developed for the serial killer until the blood was found. The full profile will be uploaded to the FBI's national database on Friday, giving authorities key evidence to possibly link Bundy to long unsolved crimes. So, this national database that police agencies all over the country access for DNA matches, now Ted Bundy's has been loaded in. And
so anybody anywhere, huh?
Any police agency that has access to the FBI national database, and generally that means they will access their own state police or their state crime task force or whatever, and they go to the FBI database, and this database contains the DNA samples of, geez, I don't know who. I mean,
well, is they all criminal or what?
I don't know if everybody's a criminal. I always used to think the national database, because they have the fingerprints, and those aren't all criminals. My fingerprints are there. If you've been arrested, well, I just had to.
Oh man, you got arrested, man.
You got busted.
You know that when I was very young, yes, I did.
Man, you never said nothing about that.
Yes, I did. I said it on the air.
So your fingerprints are in the national fingerprint in case they find a dead woman. They'll go and check for Phil Hendry.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do, bud. Yeah, I'm number one on their list. I'm number one on their list. In any event, so the FBI's national database will give authorities with this Ted Bundy DNA sample a possible link to long unsolved crimes. Possible. It's possible that Ted Bundy had nothing to do with some of these crimes. The vial was, however remote, it is possible. Anyway, the vial was discovered after Florida authorities took the sofa cushions and had them washed at a guy's house, and they found... I'm kidding. No, it doesn't. It says that they...
They found it under a guy's sofa?
No, I'm joking around. The vial was discovered after Florida authorities received a call from a detective working a cold case in Tacoma, Washington. The blood had been taken in 1978 when Bundy was arrested for the death of a 12-year-old girl in Columbia County, Florida, according to the News Tribune in Tacoma. Despite an order to destroy much of the biological evidence in the Florida case, the vial was still on file with David Kaufman, chief of forensic services at the Florida Department of Law Enforcement's Tallahassee Crime Lab. We were really surprised. Why would they destroy the biological evidence? Did they think it was...
Maybe they thought it was like a disease.
Could have been. Anyway, this gentleman, Mr. Kaufman, said that we were really surprised. Kaufman cautioned that it will be a challenge to find full DNA samples from so long ago, making a match unlikely. But if there is a match, authorities they will know right away. The Tacoma detective was investigating the 1961 disappearance of Anne Marie Burr, a six-year-old who vanished from her home in the middle of the night. Bundy is among several possible suspects. The Tacoma detective said they had letters Bundy had sent that might contain his DNA on the stamps or envelope and could be used to develop a forensic profile and possibly discover if he was linked to the Burr case. Wow, 1961, how old was this guy anyway?
He could have been like a teenager.
Kaufman said the agency said it had some items to examine, too. There was a display case with evidence from Bundy's trial in their lab. Among the items, dental molds of Bundy's teeth and the wax impressions that had been used to make them. After hanging up with her, I went to our display and looked at it, Kaufman said. I said, there's got to be something. DNA's gotten so sensitive now. They had a mold made of Bundy's teeth because they found bite marks on one of the victims, and I think they were able to match the teeth, Ted Bundy's teeth, to the bite marks. He decided to try the molds for traces of saliva, but there were a number of fingerprints on them, so it wasn't a great sample. At about the same time, the Florida agency discovered the Columbia County Clerk's Office had an original blood sample taken from Bundy. It resulted in a complete forensic profile with all 13 core markers used in tests against the DNA database. A bulletin will be sent to law enforcement agencies across the country when the DNA is uploaded. Tacoma police are among those waiting. Detectives are sending evidence to the state crime lab to see if there is still DNA on it 50 years later. This is really important now, you know, for families especially, to find out what happened to their daughters. And as we said on the show once before, this was a deal struck by Gary Ridgway with the Washington authorities. Some people didn't like it. I didn't like it at the time, but until I got to thinking about what it was they were able to get in return for promising Gary Ridgway.
You said Ridgway.
Did I? Man, the stuff that you get kicks out of.
What are you talking about, man?
Oh, Gary Ridgway.
So what? Gary Ridgway. Dude, I'm in the middle of talking about murders and stuff. Do you mind?
Sorry.
Anyway, what they said to Ridgway was, you know, as we've told you, if you tell us, if you will lead us to the bodies of your victims, we will promise you life in prison. Now, a lot of people might not have liked that. I thought at the time I didn't quite get it. Now I do. I understand. These families, They're beside themselves. They're just heartsick, and they're distraught, and they have no idea what happened to their family members. So when Ridgway started coughing up this information, they were able to solve some missing person cases and what happened to some of these women. So this is important stuff. If they can find out where perhaps some of these bodies lay or who they are, who the women are, et cetera, then that's it's good for them. So that's, you know.
Well, that story kind of petered out, didn't it?
Peter out? What do you mean petered out?
Yeah, but ain't really all that much more to say.
I said what I wanted to say about it, okay?
Still got 5 minutes to break.
So what if I got 5 minutes to the break? I said all I wanted to take that outside. Take the trash out. I got more stuff I want to say.
What?
About, I'll show you what the story is. What do you mean petered out? We said what we wanted to say about it. Here's one that I love, man. A California judge this week ordered the shutdown of Zadiva, a company which played back DVDs by streaming them over the internet. Now, what does that mean? Judge John Walter ordered the service from Zadiva and a collection of Hollywood studios suing it to meet and draft a preliminary injunction before August 10th. Zadiva was also ordered to post a $50,000 bond. Now, here's what Zadiva did that was wrong. The copyright infringement laws, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, all of these things are completely misunderstood by people that use the internet. And as a result, they run afoul of copyright infringement. And then when they are told that they've run afoul of copyright infringement, they're sort of taken by surprise. They don't know, what does that mean? What did I do? I thought we had something called Safe Harbor. Most people that I've talked to don't even understand what Safe Harbor is. Safe Harbor does not mean you get to do anything that you want to do. Safe Harbor means if you had or were hosting or were otherwise making available to the public a video clip, an audio clip, some piece of copyright-protected material. And then the copyright holder told you, hi, that's mine, would you please take it down? you have had safe harbor. Oh, okay, you take it down. So no one sues you or goes after you for having hosted a clip that was copyright protected, and you didn't know who the copyright holder was, and you figured you had safe harbor. They have to come to you and tell you they want that clip taken down. So that's safe harbor. Safe harbor is not, would you take my clip down? No, I won't. I'm going to keep on playing it because I have safe harbor. That's not what that is. But some people just want to be stupid, and they just want to. And some people want to argue the law. Like, if they argue hard enough, then it isn't isn't a law anymore. Rather than building a streaming library like Netflix Watch Instantly, Zadiva allowed customers to remotely rent a DVD and DVD player located at its Silicon Valley data center, the content of which can be watched on a variety of Internet-enabled devices. The service rented movies at $1.99 for a four-hour period, or $10 for 10 movies. Zadiva was able to compete with Netflix by buying the DVD as soon as they were released instead of waiting the 30 days that the Netflix license takes into account. Most new releases are subject to a 30-day waiting period before they're available to Netflix or Redbox and other similar services in order to bolster DVD sales and pay-per-view rentals. So there's a 30-day waiting period before you are allowed to air that material if you're Netflix or you're a commercial provider of video content. You are making commercially available to the public copyright-protected material. You have a right. You have been given a license by the license holder. And the license holder is getting a piece of your action, and the license holder is saying, yes, you may, thus and so. What's happened with Zadiva is the following. Zadiva said, we're not going to wait the 30 days. Why should we have to wait the 30 days? We'll buy the video, so we own it, and we will now make it available for rent, that is, playback on a player at our Silicon data center, and it will play back on your computer. Well, they don't think that they have run afoul of any copyright law because they don't think they're making that available to the public. They said to the judge, we're making it available to one user in his home privately. And the judge said, you don't understand what public means then. If you're making a piece of product commercially available to anybody in the public, whether they're sitting by themselves in their home or whether there's 100 of them sitting in a living room, you are now making that commercially available to the public. And therefore, you have to have the permission of the rights holder. They did not. All they had was the receipt for purchasing the DVD. Well, it's no different. It's a violation of the copyright, technically, to have the DVD, show it to a bunch of people, and charge money, making it available to anybody to watch and profiting commercially from it. That violates the copyright of the right holder. So that's what the judge said, and he agreed with the Warner Brothers people, Columbia, Disney, Paramount, 20th Century Fox, Universal. All of these people filed a lawsuit in federal court. They have the exclusive right to decide when, where, to whom, and for how much they will authorize transmission of their copyrighted works to the public, Judge Walter wrote in his order. That happens to be true for all copyright holders. And yet, and this is the thing about most of these so-called Internet freedom people who like to talk a good game, they're scared to death of the big lawyers. They will run, turn tail, and run. The people that the Internet freedom people violate and steal from are small businesses, people that won't hire big lawyers right away, or people that can't afford to hire a lawyer, period. That's who these so-called Internet freedom people victimize and steal from and rob blind, and they say they're doing it all in the name of Internet freedom. Well, take on Warner Brothers then, if you're so butch. All right. Finally, he tossed out Zadiva's argument, get a load of this is desperate, that the company was not broadcasting movies to the public, but to private homes. And the judge said, a commercial relationship is a public relationship. If you're charging that guy money, if you're selling to him something, that's a commercial relationship. And that makes that person that you're selling that product to a member of the public.
How can you know so much about this?
I know so much about it because I deal with this stuff every day in my own business. It's pretty interesting. You should look up the DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. Most people don't even know what that is, have never read it, and don't think it exists, but it does. All right, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're going to be coming back in a minute here. A white supremacist loses his job at a Catholic school. How is that possible? How is it possible that he got hired in the first place? We'll find out here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Hey, don't forget that if you go to our homepage, we have a five-day archive of all of our video casts. So if you've missed a video cast, and the video cast is the radio show, with the extra added bonus of looking at my ugly kisser as I do the show. It's exciting. It could be traumatic, but what the hell? It's a little something extra we throw in, and it's an HD. My pasty Irish face in HD. How do you beat that? All right. Catholic school principal fired for white supremacist views. Well, that's just another day at the office, isn't it? I'm joking around. The Archdiocese of New York, although for me, I got to tell you, you know, I told my producer, Jason Rantz, I said my first exposure to an anti-Semite was, I shouldn't say, well, I'm going to say it because it happened. My first exposure to a blatant anti-Semite was one of the brothers that taught me in high school, in Catholic high school. This guy was giving me books about how Jews were this and Jews were that and Jews were commies. And I mean, it was all true, but I'm kidding, okay?
You're going to get in trouble.
I'm not. He knows I'm kidding.
Who?
The only Jew we got on the staff. Now,
Oh, man.
All right, I'm kidding around. So, actually, we have two. Jason and you, bud.
Right.
All right. The Archdiocese of New York fired a Bronx Catholic school principal whose white supremacist beliefs were found to be incompatible with the philosophy and practices of the church, the Archdiocese said on Tuesday. The church launched an investigation of Frank Borzalieri, excuse me, I practiced it too.
Borzalieri,
who had been principal of Our Lady of Mount Carmel School in the Tremont section since 2009, after the New York Daily News revealed his link to white supremacist groups. Mr. Frank Borzalieri has been relieved of his position as principal of Our Lady of Mount Carmel School. Joseph Zwilling, a church spokesman, said in a statement, the decision was reached following a thorough internal review of his opinions and beliefs as expressed in his books and columns and a discussion with Mr. Borzalieri himself. Borzalieri's ability to run a school where a majority of students are black and Latino came into question after reports that he has written books declaring America's growing minority populations would usher in a new dark age.
Well, technically...
What do you mean, you mean just...
Yeah, a shade of skin.
Well, if you're only talking about the shade of skin, yes, it would be a new dark age. Although if more people went out and got tan... Never mind. So, according to his Facebook page, Borzalieri has written for a white supremacist publication noting his long-standing ties to American Renaissance, a publication that has expressed support for eugenics and the racialism of the early 20th century. His ability to run a school where a majority of students are black and Latino came into question after reports that he has written books declaring America's growing minority population to usher in a new dark age. He also reportedly once tried to get a biography of Martin Luther King Jr. banned from public school libraries. How in hell did this guy escape the scrutiny? You know, I think, I honest to God, I believe this. I think for some people, some of this stuff is, well, you know,
what do you mean?
I mean, in other words, if I said to the average, I'm going to say this, and some people are going to think I'm lying. I'm telling you, I say this from my heart. If you say to the average white person, this cat's beliefs, okay?
Yeah.
They're going to go, this is what the average white person will say. This is, boy, that's, yeah, you can't do that and teach at a Catholic school. I mean, they're not going to go, wow, is that guy off? Or, wow, where does he get, they're just going to say, eh. You know.
Well, what are you saying? Like, the white people think like that and everything?
You do, bud.
No, I don't.
Well, you got that problem with black people.
Did I get along with Robert? Yeah, sometimes.
I don't know, man. You're weird. I didn't want to bring... You're not even an example of anything normal. I'm saying that a lot of white folks will say, wow, that's really bad. That guy shouldn't, you know, he shouldn't be talking about that stuff. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it isn't so much what he believes, it's what he's been running his mouth about. Borzilieri's books include, this guy wrote these books, dig this, The Unspoken Truth, Race, Culture, and Other Taboos, and Don't Take It Personally, Race, Immigration, and Other Heresies. He notes on his Facebook page that he's best known for his conservative views on immigration, affirmative action, gun control, education, libertarianism, and his opposition to what he terms the lack of morality and the lack of focus on the basics of learning in the New York City public school system. Mount Carmel pastor, the Reverend Eric Rapaglia, said he knew of Borzilieri's views, but didn't, this is what I'm saying, but didn't see any cause for concern when he hired him to run the school. That's what I'm talking about. That's the way some white people think. And speaking of the way some white people think, I'd like to give you a little piece of my mind. Our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Technical director is Dan Northcraft. And, of course, our technical and associate producers, Chris Johnson and Fred Scotty. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com for all your Phil Hendry Show needs. Good day.
Phil Hendry.